All right. Good morning, everyone. I am here to talk to you today about our pilot program that we did in Minnesota, as John introduced, counseling Somali women about cycle beads, or the standard days method. I have no financial relationships to disclose. I first wanted to start out by just giving you a little bit of background, for those of you who don't know, about the Somali refugee population in Minnesota. Somalis began arriving in the United States in the early 1990s due to the collapse of their central government and the civil war that ensued. Minnesota actually has the largest Somali population in the United States. The official estimate is around 30,000 currently. That's based on the 2004 state demographer's estimate plus the primary refugee arrivals since that time. However, the community estimates that it is much higher, 60,000, 70,000 plus. And the reason for this discrepancy is because it is such a mobile population and there's a lot of secondary migration that happens after they move to the United States. So it's very difficult to actually ascertain concrete population estimates. I also wanted to introduce you a little bit to kind of the health background of the Somali refugee population. Where are they coming from when they arrive in the United States? First is that preventive health is largely unfamiliar to the Somali population. They really come from a curative model of care. And so when you are trying to transition them, not only in family planning, but in all areas of health, trying to transition them to this concept of preventive health. So when you're introducing ideas such as family planning, it's sometimes a difficult leap for people to make. There's very low contraceptive usage rates among women in Somalia. This is before they migrate to the United States. Most recent estimates, and again, these are difficult because of the continuing civil war, most recent estimates is that among 18 to 45-year-old married women, there's only 8% use any method of family planning, and among those, only 1% are using modern methods. So this is use of modern contraceptive methods or hormonal methods is virtually non-existent. However, we're seeing that when the Somali population is arriving in the United States and in Minnesota, there is a dramatically increased need for family planning, and this is due to the changing demographic trends when they relocate here. In Somalia, their fertility rates are fairly high. An average woman has about 7 lifetime births, but at the same time, infant mortality rates are high at about 119 per 100,000. However, when they come to the U.S., the fertility rates remain high, but at the same time, because of increased access to care, prenatal care, postpartum care, and attended deliveries, the infant mortality rates are dramatically lowering. So in 2004, Minnesota International Health Volunteers undertook a series of focus groups to better understand attitudes and knowledge about family planning. And the organization wanted to do this before developing any kind of programming, education and outreach programming into the community, because we wanted to design it to be something that was culturally relevant and therefore more effective. So what we found from the focus groups is that there were 3 main findings. The first is that there's a high prevalence of misinformation and fears about contraceptive methods. Despite the fact that almost 46 of participants in the focus groups were using a method to space their children, there were things like hormonal methods cause birth defects, they cause infertility, along with a lot of the common misinformation and fears that you hear from mainstream women about weight gain, changes in menstrual bleeding, etc. We also found that there were a lot of environmental barriers to care that prevented Somali women from obtaining reproductive health services. These were things like lack of knowledge about where to go for appointments, difficulty obtaining childcare during those appointments, difficulty using the transportation system, language barriers, concerns about confidentiality, especially with interpreters. So a whole host of issues quite often kept Somali women from going for services. And finally, and this is really the main one when we are discussing these issues of family planning in relation to the Somali refugee population, is that religion and culture play a key role in Somali views and decisions about family planning. Family planning and child spacing is often a difficult topic to broach with Somalis because of the notion that children are a gift from God. And I should mention here that almost, nearly 100%, 99% of the Somali refugees, at least in Minnesota, do identify as Muslim. So there's this notion that children are a gift from God and that the number of children one has is according to his will. So most often people don't want to interfere with that by way of using contraceptive methods. To go into a little bit more detail about how Islam plays out in a Somali refugee's decision-making when they're actually looking at the specific methods. Many actually do find natural family planning methods, so non-hormonal methods, acceptable because there is a lot of documentation that the Prophet Muhammad actually used a contraceptive method himself, and that was withdrawal. So by extension, people feel comfortable using methods such as withdrawal, the standard days method, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, and other things like exclusive breastfeeding, which is also emphasized in the Quran. However, when we get into the issue of hormonal methods, people's interpretation of Islam diverges a bit. Many believe that hormonal methods are not acceptable because they cause bodily harm. And again, in the Quran, there are teachings that say you should not inflict bodily harm upon yourself. And the way this is interpreted in relation to hormonal methods is that because they change your natural state or system by altering your hormones, that this is interpreted as bodily harm, as well as side effects that may ensue because of using hormonal methods. So some people find that in conflict with the teachings about not causing bodily harm. On the other hand, some people think that hormonal methods are acceptable. They use the analogy that the Prophet Muhammad used contraceptive methods, the ones that were available to him in his day and time. So by extension, Muslims now can use the hormonal methods that are available in this day and age. So the pilot program that we developed at Minnesota International Health Volunteers was to do a pilot program specifically counseling women about the standard days method. Since we found through the focus groups and our previous work with the Somali refugee population that natural family planning methods were fairly widely accepted, we wanted to start there. We wanted to meet the community where they were comfortable in terms of educating the community about child spacing. So we trained a Somali community health worker. She was female, and we were partnering with a community family planning clinic, and their medical director trained her in how to counsel about the standard days method, or cycle beads. Then she was on site at a low-income high-rise tower, so subsidized housing where a large population of Somali refugees were living. And she conducted one-on-one home visits. So she would go door to door. She knew a lot of people already because she had been on site at this building for a while doing other education and counseling on other health issues. And so she had already had a somewhat established rapport with the residents of the building. The home visits lasted about an hour. And the community health worker screened them for eligibility. Basically, how cycle beads works. Quick tutorial for those who may not be familiar with them. It's a color-coded string of beads that tells you the days that you're most likely to be fertile and the days that you are not likely to be fertile or get pregnant. So the brown bead days are the days you are not likely to get pregnant, and the white bead days are the days that you are likely to get pregnant. And there's a little rubber band here that you move with each day of your cycle. So you start here on the red bead for the first day of your menstrual cycle, and you move it each day as you go along in your cycle. And these beads have been shown to be effective for women whose cycles are between 26 to 32 days, so women that have regular cycles. So when our community health worker was screening for eligibility, she was making sure that they did have regular cycles before she educated them about using this method. If they were eligible, if their cycles were regular, and if they wanted to start using cycle beads, we did procure some cycle beads that we were able to give to the women for free. And then the community health worker did follow-up visits approximately 3 months after the initial visit, just to check in with them, see if they had any questions about using it, see if they had any problems or and generally just to support them in using the method. We also partnered with the Georgetown University Institute for Reproductive Health to translate and adapt some of the educational materials that they had previously developed for low literacy populations. So we actually did two different educational materials specifically on this method. When you get these beads, there's actually an English language little insert that you find inside that it's a little instructional, tells you how to use it, who can use it, and we wanted to create something similar in the Somali language and also with drawings or paintings that would actually reflect the Somali population. So they see, oh, this is something that pertains to me. This is, you know, something I'm going to pick up and read, and it's applicable to me. So we translated materials, like I said, from Georgetown University Institute for Reproductive Health into Somali, and commissioned a local artist to do some artwork, and you can come up perhaps after if you're interested in looking at this more closely, that would reflect the Somali population in the Twin Cities. Even though this was a low literacy instructional insert, there is a high percentage of the Somali population who are not literate even in the Somali language. And so we wanted to be sure to reach those people as well with the same information that is contained in the instructional insert. So we actually did an educational video. It's a short little 10-minute video. And it starts out with a Somali community health worker talking about the benefits of child spacing. So before jumping into the actual instructions about how to use cycle beads, there's a few minutes of information about why is child spacing important. Again, since this population is transitioning towards this idea of preventive health, and child spacing or family planning, until this time has been something that is relatively not common in the population. Then it jumps to a Somali physician who explains how the cycle beads work. So that is the information that's contained in this pamphlet. So someone is able to, we left this with the women when the community health worker visited their homes so that they'd be able to refer to it later. In addition, the home visits were between two females. So our female community health worker would counsel a female Somali living in the high-rise tower. It was not a couples counseling situation. So this also allowed the woman, if she decided to use cycle beads, to be able to show this to her husband afterwards so that he could become more familiar with the method as well. So the results of this pilot intervention, our community health worker made visits over 9 months. And she made 43 home visits during that time. And considering the sensitivity of this subject, we were very pleased with that number of visits. It was approximately 5 per month, which might seem low at the outset, but considering the difficult nature of working on this topic and the myriad of other issues that the population has to deal with, I mean, child spacing is not always on the top of their list in terms of things that they're concerned about or motivated to act on in terms of their health. And so we were very pleased with this outcome. Somewhat surprisingly, 100% were eligible, so everyone that our community health worker visited had a regular cycle, and all of them started using the cycle beads. The average age of the woman that we visited was about 31 years, and that ranged from 21 to 45 years. Their average number of children was 2.6, and that ranged from 1 to 6 children. 16% had used contraception previously, but they were not using contraception at the time that the community health worker visited them. And 91% had discussed child spacing with their husband prior to the home visit. And this was a little surprising, at least for me. We kind of had this idea that perhaps Somali couples, the husbands and wives, weren't talking about this a whole lot. So we were a bit surprised to find that there is a high level of conversation about this. We then were able to conduct 23 follow-up visits in the 9-month period. And we found that 83% were continuing use. And we were very excited about this finding because the ones that were no longer continuing use, it was not because they found the method difficult to use or didn't like the method. It was because they no longer had a need for a contraceptive method. So they stopped using it because their partner had, their husbands had, maybe they were gone long-term for business, a couple had actually gotten divorced during the time. But really high satisfaction rates with the method. We asked them a few follow-up questions in the follow-up visit. The first, what do you do if you forget to move the ring? And we got answers such as check calendars. So this showed that women were marking their calendars in addition to using the method so that if they missed a day or, you know, needed to double check where they were in their cycle, that they were on track with it. One actually said that their husband helps them to remember. So that shows that there is continued conversation about child spacing and specifically about the use of this method. Another said that she uses a picture sign in her bedroom. So there, someone was using a little reminder system to be able to use this method every day. We also asked them what their husbands think. And similar to the women, there was overwhelming satisfaction with the method. They said it was nice, a good method. And overwhelmingly, women said that their husbands knew that the white bead days were the days that they were going to get pregnant. So we were excited to find that. We also asked them what they do on the white bead days. And we got the responses that we were hoping for. They don't have sex or they use condoms or protection during the white bead days. So this really demonstrated that the Somali women that we counseled really understood the method and were using it correctly. And this showed up in the fact that we only had one pregnancy out of these 23 women. And that's consistent with the approximately 5% pregnancy rate that the cycle beads have been tested that it shows. So some conclusions about this pilot project. It's really important to meet the community where they are by educating them about culturally acceptable family planning methods. We didn't jump right in there and start talking to them about hormonal methods because we knew that was a controversial topic. So we wanted to start out by doing something that was more likely to be acceptable, something that was culturally relevant. And this, we believe, is what led to the high acceptance and continuation rates and satisfaction with the method. We also felt that it was effective because the community health worker was well-trained. Like I said, we worked with a community clinic partner to train her. She was the same gender, and she shared the language, the culture, the religion, the experience of being a refugee and moving to Minnesota, so she could really identify and understand the women, where they were coming from, and we believe that this is what led to the effective counseling around this method. And finally, we feel that in other populations where hormonal methods may not be widely acceptable, that this could be a project that could be replicated in other populations or scaled up in the population where we worked. Thank you.
We'll have time for discussion at the end, but if anyone has any immediate questions or clarifications, I think we have plenty of time for that.
Yes. The Georgetown Institute for Reproductive Health is the institution that developed them, and I think they were, correct me if I'm wrong, initially developed more for use in underserved populations, low-income populations globally is where I was familiar with them initially. Yes. Yes. So the question was, did we consider at all going in into educating or counseling about hormonal methods? And I'm glad you brought that up because this pilot project was actually kind of a sub-project of a much larger education and outreach project about child spacing or family planning. And after the conclusion of this project, and with continued funding from the larger project, we actually did expand our counseling and education to include all methods. Yes? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It wasn't promoted as a pregnancy planning tool necessarily, although we did mention for women, you know, who were concerned, because many women were concerned about return to fertility with hormonal methods. So that was a good way to introduce this method to say, okay, when you want to have children, you just flip it around and you're able to use it to plan your pregnancies instead of space your pregnancies. And your comment about the cultural values around larger families, we quite often, when the Somali population hears the term family planning, it is quite often interpreted as limiting the number of children. And we did not want that to come out in the way that we did our education and counseling. And so we always use the term child spacing or pregnancy planning. And we like to talk to the community about the importance, the health benefits, the family benefits of spacing your children 2, 3, 4 years for the welfare of the whole family. So that's how we approach that topic. Yes. We didn't scale up the CycleBead specific project. We have a larger project that does outreach and education around a whole host of not only methods, but it also does community-wide sensitization. Right now, I know it's working on some social marketing campaigns around the issue of child spacing, and unfortunately, I don't have the results data with me. Our executive director and the project director for this project is here, so I'm sure she'd be happy to talk to you afterwards about that. In the back?
I have a question about how do you think that the concept of life that they were here is something that actually is the fact that the fact that it's open intervention. Meaning if you were to implement that same program for Somalia, do you think that would do something different?
That's a really good question. I would have to think that the high acceptance of family planning here in this country certainly helped to facilitate, but given that, at least in Minnesota, the community, in a large respect, is fairly insulated, meaning that they tend to cluster geographically where they live, and it's often dictated by the kind of housing that they're available, that they are able to access. So they're put in these high-rise, low-income apartment buildings, or there are large communities where Somali people live. And so, I mean, they do have to interact with the mainstream system for general things like health and school, etc., but to a large degree, much of the population is primarily in contact with other Somali refugees. So I would think that this could be a very successful model if it was piloted in Somalia or other areas. It has been shown to be very successful in other areas in Africa, and I would assume Somalia as well. Yes?
Where are CycleBeads most widely used in Africa?
We'll defer that question to the person from the Institute.
And I'll use that as a segue to postpone further questions and maybe even leave the CycleBeads up there, because we're going to hear more about them from Rebecca shortly. In the meantime, let me introduce Dr. Sushanta Banerjee from IPAS India, where he is the research and evaluation advisor. He holds a master's and doctoral degrees in demography. And I live just down the street from IPAS headquarters in North Carolina, and I told someone there that I was had the opportunity to introduce Dr. Banerjee, and they said, oh, you're very lucky. He loves to delve into the data, and he makes it come alive. So now, since I've built up the expectations unreasonably high, I'll turn it over to Dr. Banerjee.